When I was younger and more inclined to chase paper at literally all hours of the night, I took a side gig as an Uber driver. This was on top of my full-time job in retail. Working a counter and making sales just didn't have the payout that I needed at the time. And I wasn't smart enough to just find a better job or simply negotiate a raise. Instead, I did what so many of our working youth do today and picked up a second job. I lived in this big city, drove a nicer car that I loved zipping around in, so working Uber made a lot of sense in my mind. This was around 10 years ago, so the company had successfully launched and was making waves all over the country. You'd hear about people clearing six-figure salaries, all just from giving people rides around their community. People I'd talked to, just in passing, all told me the same thing. It was easy money that you could make hand over fist. I can't really tell you that it wasn't that. I pulled a decent amount in this little side hustle, but I wasn't doubling my income like I thought I would. It also put me in this new level of exhaustion, because I had to sacrifice sleep in order to have more productive Uber shifts. This meant I was going all the time. I'd get off the retail job around 5 p.m., grab a quick bite to eat, and then off to work Uber until about 2 in the morning. Anything after that time, I quickly learned was just riffraff. And this was back when Uber didn't have quite the protocol that it does now. It wasn't unheard of for some pretty wild stuff to happen in the backseat of these cars. Fast forward a little bit, and I'm like 6 months into this new working world. I've gotten the swing of working double shifts, where the higher yield areas are for pickups, and how to make a quick turnaround in both drop-offs and getting back down to the downtown areas. If you took the wrong road, you'd come up on the opposite side, where a lot of commercial and business parks were. You'd have to make these weird loops that took extra time and gas to do so. There was a hospital downtown that I would periodically idle nearby, as it had serious real estate in the form of parking lots. I could just rest here and check my phone, not have to worry about the hustle and bustle of traffic, even catch a few Z's if I needed to. There were also various fast food joints and convenience stores nearby, everything to keep me in the game. Occasionally, I'd drink a Red Bull or something, but it wasn't that often. Alas, I found myself at the end of an exhaustive cycle. I was definitely about to reach my limit. One night, during that red line period, I did my usual routine where I pulled into the hospital while waiting for a client. It was an unusually slow night, and I was expecting lots of passengers, so I didn't really know what to do. I held out that I'd make more money later on in that night, so went and got an energy drink from a vending machine in the lobby. It didn't matter. I plopped back down in the driver's seat, turned on my favorite playlist, and then passed out just right there. I wasn't asleep for very long, but it was a deep, catatonic rest. You know the one. Mouth wide open, drooling, mouth breathing, looking my absolute worst. There is one thing that I dislike more, and that's the feeling of waking up when I shouldn't have been asleep. My brain starts to immediately overcompensate. I can't make any connections despite all the sparks. I can't remember where I am, who I am, what I'm doing. There are times when teachers would catch me sleeping in high school. I'd be so startled when they woke me up. I couldn't even speak proper English. Just make weird noises and get silent, then literally have to remember how to make it all make sense. It was one of those times. I remember kicking myself awake because my head was at this weird funny angle. I made this kind of groaning sound as I snapped back into the waking world. I was still inside my car. It was still nighttime. Hell, it was the same playlist coming through the speakers. I peeked up at the clock and saw that I was only out for maybe 15 minutes. I took a deep breath through my nose and then settled into the seat. A cat nap was actually perfect, allegedly giving us more energy than a longer nap. I checked my phone and saw that I didn't miss anything, but there was a person that I could swoop up nearby and make a few bucks off. I took another swig of my drink, checked my mirrors, and then went to shift into park. I stopped though. There was something off in my rearview mirror. If I wasn't mistaken, there was a person sitting right behind me, in the middle seat. We make eye contact. I whirl around and sure enough, plain as day, there's a man just sitting not 12 inches from me. He gets a little smile across his face and just kind of nods, like he was acknowledging that I'd been asleep. It almost looked like a little hello on his end. I really didn't know what to do. Part of me wanted to start screaming at him to get out. Another part of me wanted to put on this front, act real tough, and then the other part of me just wanted to ask what he was doing inside my car. That's when I looked down and saw the Uber app open in his phone. I remember the sticker in my window that I was parked outside of a hospital. This guy probably exited one of these buildings, was wandering to a through street while he booked a ride. Then he just happened to see me. For whatever reason, seeing his phone helped my brain regain just a little coherence. That put the panic to rest. So I simply said, "Hi, what are you doing in my car?" He didn't respond for a moment, just kind of looked at the floor and then the ceiling, anywhere but directly at me. I gestured to his phone and then continued to talk. "Are you looking for a ride or something?" I asked. He nodded. Okay, he's at least halfway normal. I got on at length for a bit, pulling my seatbelt on. Then I explained to him what I explained to you. I worked two jobs, I was tired, and I just happened to fall asleep. I said I'd be happy to give him a ride in exchange for a good review, one that wouldn't say that I was sleeping inside my car. We both shared a laugh on that one. "I'm trying to get downtown," he said. He pointed back Jackson Drive, a main drag through the area. "Where?" I asked. He then gave me these loose directions, but said it was pretty close to an old music venue that had shut down a few years before. I was familiar with that area, so I just started the route. We made a little small talk, mostly about myself and how I'd fallen asleep. This guy's name was Donovan. He said that when he got in the car, he went to speak but saw that I was snoring, so just decided to wait. "Well, I appreciate you not being a weirdo," I said. "I was about to freak out before I saw your Uber app." Then it hits me. This guy and I aren't actually linked up. He never ordered a ride through the app, and I haven't logged picking anyone up. I take a quick glance at him in the rear view and say, "Hey, I just realized this ride isn't registered. Can you find me on the app really quickly?" That's when the guy scoffs, looks out the window and says, "Oh, I'm not paying for this." I laugh, to which he just stays silent. It's getting a little awkward now. I glance into the back real quick, realize the mistake that I've now made. This guy isn't dressed like a professional, no business casual, if you catch my drift. He's filthy, he's got torn up clothes, he's only got one shoe on. His face is dirty and dark from sun exposure. There's this grimy backpack next to him. He's homeless, he has to be. While I was asleep, some drifter hanging around the hospital must have just climbed into my car, thinking he'd be able to sleep in it or something. I noticed it on my second glance though. Donovan is wearing a bracelet, the paper kind that they use in the hospital for discharge. This guy probably OD'd behind a trash can, got Narcan'd, and is now getting a free ride back to his crack house. All because I couldn't keep my eyes open. I shake my head, hit my blinker, and then start guiding my car towards the next exit. "Yo, where you going?" he asked from the back. "I told you where we're going." "I'm not driving you across town for free, dude. You're lucky I don't even call the cops," I countered. I took my phone out of the cup holder beside me just to show him that I wasn't messing around. "Yeah," Donovan said. "You're lucky I don't unlace my shoe and strangle you with it." Before I could even blink, I felt his crusty, calloused hands sneak around the headrest and wrap around my throat. Instinctually, I took one hand off the wheel and tried to break his grip, but I couldn't do it. I barely got a finger underneath his palm to create just this little space to breathe. Panic started to set in. As I watched a minute tick by on the clock, I tried to get this guy off of me. I could hear his raspy breath just behind me. The smell coming off his hands and mouth was completely disgusting. This dude definitely hadn't showered in at least a week or more. Then it finally hits me. I had to get him off of me. I check my mirrors and see that I'm alone on this stretch of the highway. I then firmly slam on my brakes. I was belted in, but dipshit Donovan behind me wasn't as lucky. He slammed forward, right into my seat, which created a little space in his arms. I yanked with my free hand, broke his grip, and then gunned the car over the shoulder. At this point, Donovan has recovered and is now trying to grab me again, but I'm not letting that happen twice. We're in a bit of a standoff now. I put the car in the park and put the hazards on. I say to hell with it. This has already gone too far. I dial 911, hit the call button, and press the phone to my ear. He starts to trip out, makes a lot more threats, but starts to get out of my car now. That's when I notice he's holding a purse, a pretty nice one at that. He grumbles a little bit, shoulders his backpack in that purse, then steps out into the cool night air. He then proceeds to start walking down the shoulder, down the exit ramp and back into the city. I hear dispatch in my ear and I realize I can't just let this asshole go. I start rattling off everything that just happened to me, where I'm at and where the perp is located. As I'm describing the scene, the dispatcher gets quiet for a second, maybe even mutes me, then comes back with new information just a minute later. She says my report matches an earlier one from that exact hospital that I was parked at. Apparently, old Donovan had been admitted exactly as I figured, and during his stay, he became incoherent, agitated, and realized that he wasn't being supervised. He unhooked himself from the machine, put his clothes back on, then just exited the hospital, but not before stealing a purse out of one of the rooms in his wing. She noticed not long after it went missing and got with hospital security. They got on the cameras. It didn't take very long to see this guy strolling out the front door with that woman's purse in hand. From there, he starts running, as seen on the footage. He was probably paranoid about getting caught now that he'd exited the hospital. He zigzagged through the parking lot for a bit before coming upon my car, which was on and idling. D-bag Donovan thought he was going to be able to steal my car up until he saw me sleeping in it. From there, he just snuck into the back and hid from any potential hospital security. Needless to say, Donovan's night went south after he got out of my car. I told dispatch where I was and where he was headed, and then even followed him down the exit ramp. I didn't make it two blocks before a cop swooped in, flashed him with the lights and siren, and threw him in a pair of cuffs. The phone that I'd seen in his hand was the woman's phone. He'd found it in her purse. He was trying to figure out how to order an Uber in the event that I didn't wake up. It just happened to be the perfect guys in the moment. I gave a statement to the officers who hauled him off. I suspected he spent a couple of weeks drying out in a jail cell. I probably don't need to say this, but remember to lock your car doors, people. I'm a 46-year-old male, and while I wouldn't say I've had a life of danger and intrigue, I have worked a handful of unusual jobs. I've traveled a good bit, and have some interesting life experiences. I've also inherited some strange traits from my father, which attracts weirdos, crazies, and the troublemakers. I don't know if it's my appearance or just some sort of aura, but if I'm in a crowd and there's a mentally unstable homeless person in the vicinity, you can damn well bet that they're going to approach me. When I tell people this, they often think that I'm kidding or exaggerating, but those who are around me long enough will eventually find out that it's all true. Over the years, I've amassed a collection of stories, most of them being humorous, strange, and just interesting tales. But I do have a few stories that are just downright scary. Today, I would like to share one of those with you. On a final note before I begin, I've included some details in this story that may seem unrelated to the incident itself. My reasoning for doing so is not only because I think the setting and context are significant, but also because I've got more stories from this awful period in my life. This will make a lot more sense once you hear the story. Now let the fun begin. Back in the early 2000s, I was living in the city of Pittsburgh and worked as a credit manager for a rental company. A few years prior, I had foolishly dropped out of college and was living in an apartment that I couldn't really afford. Bills were starting to pile up. I needed to find a job with a decent wage. A friend contacted me and told me that he was leaving his job. The company would be looking for a replacement. When he first told me about the job, I naively thought the company rented out furniture and appliances to businesses just for events, and once they were finished renting the items, they would conveniently be returned. How hard could that be? Boy, was I in for a rude awakening. After I got hired, I found out that the company's business model was to rent to own, and they preyed on welfare recipients and people with low incomes. The cheap rental rates for furniture, TVs, stereos, and appliances were enticing to those who couldn't afford such things. But unbeknownst to the renters, the items would take years to pay off. These people would end up paying 10 times more than what the item was really worth. My job title was just a fancy name for a repo man. If someone couldn't pay or refused to pay, it was my job to hunt them down and repossess those items. Oddly, out of all the insane situations that I'd encountered while out repoing in the projects, this occurrence actually took place behind the store on my day off. It's important to note that generally, when you see a rent-to-owned store, it's either or near a rough neighborhood. Usually, they're located conveniently near one of those payday loan stores or a token liquor store. The shopping plaza where we were located wasn't in that bad of an area, but it was closest to the shopping center to the nearby projects. I'd heard a rumor that the plaza's large parking lot was a hotbed for drug activity. And while it wasn't that uncommon to see multiple lit up police cars in the lot, I never knew if it was just drug bust or maybe just crackheads shoplifting. Now, being this was my day off, work was the last place that I wanted to be, but the shitty van that I drove at the time was having engine troubles. So when my shift ended on the previous night, I left the van in the back of the store and then got a ride from a coworker who lived nearby. The plan was to get a ride back to the store in the late morning, bring my tools and work on the van, and hopefully, get it back up and running. I remember that it was actually a beautiful summer day, which is pretty rare in Pittsburgh, so I was happy at least that I didn't have to work out in the rain. The back of the store looked like your typical loading dock area that you would see at any shopping plaza throughout the US. The plaza itself was fairly large and roughly 300 yards long. Across from the loading docking area was where all these stores kept their dumpsters. Beyond the dumpsters, there's overgrown weeds and bushes, then railroad tracks, and eventually, a wooded area that ran along the Monongahela River. Our store was located smack dab in the middle of that shopping center. I ended up getting there a little later than I wanted to. My van was high enough that I didn't need to jack it up, so I threw down some cardboard and just got immediately to work. There were some preliminary things that I had to do before I got to whatever the real, actual problem was, so I didn't really get things apart until by afternoon. And by then, it was moving back and forth between the driver's seat and the space between the van. Hours ticked by, and soon, the sun was starting to go down. I don't remember exactly how long I was under there or had been working, but I remember that I was in the driver's seat, trying to get the van started. At this point, I thought I had it pretty much pegged. I was pulling myself out from underneath the van, and I heard distant running footsteps. I stood up and saw this skinny dude about 75 yards away from me, running toward me. Aside from the immediate thinking that it was an odd place to be out for a jog, I didn't think much more of it. As he got closer to me, I nodded and said hi. But when he looked at me, it was the look of pure fear and panic. This man wasn't jogging, he was full on sprinting. He was younger than I initially thought. Maybe he was in his mid-20s and he was casually dressed, but they definitely weren't clothes that you'd wear while jogging. Completely confused, I just stood there, watched him run toward the dumpsters and then disappear. While it was odd, you usually don't see people in the back of the plaza. I was used to seeing weirdos and the occasional river people, or just homeless people, who camped out near the riverbank. I shrugged it off and decided to get back to work. Around 30 seconds later, I hear footsteps once again. I see another man running toward me. As he approached, I could tell this man was bigger and maybe in his late 30s. He had a beard and was wearing a hat. There's something about him that was a lot more intimidating, though. I'm 6'2", and at the time, I weighed about 215 pounds. People often said that I looked intimidating, to which you kind of had to at the job that I was at, but it only took one look from this man to know that he wasn't somebody to fuck with. Once he was within about 10 yards from me, he yelled, "Where is he? Where'd he go?" Without hesitation, I quickly pointed towards the dumpsters. Looking back, I felt like a pushover, just doing what this stranger told me to do. But there was this assertiveness about this guy that just made me instantly comply. This is where shit starts to get crazy. Together with the bearded man walking just slightly behind me, I began to head over toward the dumpsters, which were maybe 25 yards away. Thinking by now that skinny guy was long gone, probably deep in the wooded area near the river, I was just going to point out in the general direction to where he ran. But as we approached the dumpsters, I noticed a crouching figure behind one of them. And all of a sudden I hear, "Get the fuck out here now." When I turned around, I saw that bearded man. He was now a few feet away from me, aiming a gun directly at Skinny Guy. Dumbfounded, I just stood there, frozen, as if I couldn't process what was all going on. Skinny Guy stands up and hesitantly walks towards the bearded man, who grabs him and shouts to him immediately, "Get the fuck on the ground!" He throws him onto the pavement. I was soon snapped out of my frozen state by the sound of screeching tires. At the opposite end of the plaza, maybe 150 yards away, I turned to see a pickup fishtailing around the bend, headed straight for us at full speed. It was at this moment I realized I needed to get the hell out of this situation, instead of just standing there with my mouth hanging open. I ran back toward my van and just hid behind it. I see the pickup truck slam on its brakes just a few feet away from Skinny Guy on the ground. Two armed men get out of the truck. Another armed man jumps down from the back of the truck. All the men were yelling angrily, and every other word being fuck. I could hear one of them say to the Skinny Guy, "Oh, you fucked up, man, you fucked up." Two of the men grab Skinny Guy and yank him up off the ground. They drag him to the back of the pickup, and at gunpoint, one of them yells, "Get in the fucking truck!" They made Skinny Guy lie down, face first, on the truck bed. At this point, you can no longer see him. Two of the men get inside the cab, while the other two, still with guns drawn, climb back into the truck bed. As they're about to leave, the two men in the truck bed hunch down and try to look less conspicuous. While I could no longer see their guns, it was obvious by the way that their arms were extended. They still had their guns aimed at the Skinny Guy's head. They sped off and disappeared around that bend. For a split moment, I just stood there in disbelief, wondering what the hell I just witnessed. It all happened so fast. After the bearded man drew his gun, it seemed like from his perspective, I no longer even existed. Who the hell were those guys? Were they members of some criminal organization or drug dealers? Maybe they were even undercovers for the DEA. I thought of the possibilities that maybe they were even dirty cops. You'd think if they were law enforcement or DEA, they would have at least announced it and talked like cops or maybe even used handcuffs. Yet if they were criminals, they sure seemed organized. Didn't seem to care about waving their guns around either. Nor did they care about the fact that I was witnessing all of it. Shortly after I had these thoughts and they ran through my head, I ran into the store to tell my coworkers what just happened. I honestly can't remember who was all there that day, but I distinctly remember two of my coworkers who were there. We'll call them Sarah and Mark to protect their identities. Sarah was the receptionist. Mark was the store manager. When I told them everything that just happened, they were both said something to the effect of, "Damn, that's crazy." Yet it was like they couldn't comprehend the severity of what really happened. It wasn't like they completely shrugged it off, but they didn't seem to be as shocked as I was. It was absolutely wild to me the difference in our reactions. They were just pretty much focused on closing down. I was out back, front line to the chaos. It was a perfect dichotomy. I thought maybe it was because everyone in this godforsaken place had become so numb to the insanity. Used to hearing crazy stories from the so-called road dogs like myself. Honestly, they probably weren't all that surprised to hear the people behind the store were waving guns around. After seeing their underwhelmed reactions, I regained my composure and went back outside to finish working on my van. About a half an hour later, I saw two men slowly walking behind the dumpster area, where the pavement ended and the weeds began. Occasionally, they would stop and look through the weeds and bushes, and eventually made their way onto the railroad tracks, still looking as if they were searching for something. They weren't there for very long, and after a few minutes of looking around, they just walked away and disappeared. After that, I never heard or saw from any of those guys ever again. To this day, I don't know why I didn't report any of this incident to the police. I guess a part of me suspected they were somehow involved. My theory was the armed men were undercover cops, either police or DEA. They'd staged a drug deal and were running surveillance on one. And then they tried to arrest the Skinny Guy, or else maybe he grew suspicious and that's why he fled the scene. After fleeing, the Skinny Guy stashed or tossed the drug somewhere, hence the guy who were looking around afterwards. That seems to be the most plausible scenario. Yet another part of me has some doubts about it all. Something about the whole thing was just off, and while it's not like the incident haunts my conscience on a daily basis or anything, sometimes I do get this guilty feeling, as if I ratted that skinny guy out and sent him to his death. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I'll never know. I ended up quitting that job almost a year later. I worked there for 3 years, and toward the end, I began to notice that I'd become very cynical, mean, and depressed. I also became a heavy drinker, among other things, and I knew I had to get out of that place and find a new path, which thankfully eventually I did. Anyhow, I've tried to bury and forget most of these memories from that time in my life, but there were a few repo incidents that I can't forget, like the time I almost had to jump out of a second-story window, or the time I had to hide from a customer's psychotic husband. If there's anyone interested in these stories, leave a comment. Life is pretty busy these days, so it may take me some time, but I enjoy writing and have plenty to write about. Thanks for listening. Back when I was married, and way more appropriately aged for the job, I was a bartender in a pretty rural community. The place itself was called the Red Bear. It was kind of a local hangout for the old-timers, the day laborers, and really anyone without drama. We'd have live music on the weekends, a fish fry on Friday, all the little quaint small-town stuff that we do to drum up the business. I was one of the few women that worked there. The Red Bear had been the place to be in our town for something like 40 years. My mom had been one of the OG servers and bartenders back in the day. So it was kind of a cool experience for me, tracing the same steps, completing the same duties as my mom had done for a few decades prior. We didn't have any stake in the ownership or anything, but our history there made it feel special and super sentimental. I look forward to going to work pretty much every day. This place had a history though. Weird things happened because of it too, or at least I think so. And honestly, my first-hand experiences are pretty convincing. Because the place was a bar, some of us would be there well into the early hours in the morning, either cleaning up or finishing up some other closing duties. The building was very old, all brick and creaky lumber, had a lot of shadowy corners. The place was creepy, especially in the dark. If you were alone, it was extra unsettling, even for me. The first time I'd heard about anything, about the ghosts or whatever is in there, I heard it from my mom. I was just a little girl at the time, maybe 11 or 12. My mom would come home from work, absolutely terrified, all pale, wide-eyed, and covered in sweat. It took some prodding, but eventually, she told me some of the stories. This would set the stage for me, as by the time I got a job there, it was firmly established that the Red Bear was definitely haunted in my mind. There were really only rumors, nothing concrete about its history. Someone had been murdered there over a gambling dispute. A man caught his wife cheating with a regular, so showed up at the bar with a 12-gauge, murdered every patron in the building. A disgruntled woman who had worked in the kitchen allegedly poisoned much of the food one morning and sent multiple people to the hospital and a couple to the morgue. Again, all of these were rumors. There was very little evidence to support any of these stories. The only weird thing that might suggest one of them happened was the shotgun murder. At night when the lights were low and a band was playing, you could see glistening things in the walls. We thought they were just glitter for a long time, but one year, when a wall repair was being made, the contractor told us it definitely wasn't glitter, but birdshot embedded in the wood. Sure enough, someone had discharged a shotgun in the main room at least a couple of times in its lifetime. Whatever the case, I found myself on one of those nights, alone and closing in the dark. The building was so old that you could hear the electricity humming in the wires if it was quiet enough. Eerie. It had a grand walk-up staircase that led to the front room and then spilled into the main dining room. To the left was a smaller dining room, and then the bar beyond that. Directly behind the main room was the kitchen, a dish pit area, and then some linen storage. There was a back door that led to a path that you could take to the dumpster as well. There was also a stairwell that went down into the basement. I want you to envision the dankest, creepiest hole in the ground imaginable. Fill it with shoddy woodwork, concrete, a few buzzing light bulbs, and a series of walk-in coolers and a walk-in freezer. We kept extra kegs of beer, dry storage, all kinds of random things down there. an employee could find themselves running into the basement 3, 4, maybe even 5 times in a busy shift. If you were one of the closers, or had to do the ordering at all, you could spend a few hours down there just getting it organized. It was a Sunday. The place was a complete disaster. I'd spent the first half of closing just trying to get it all cleaned up. I was not starting to do the restock just yet. This involved multiple trips to and from the basement, getting bulk napkins, ketchup, beer bottles, you name it. I was hauling it all up for the following day service. Anyone who works in the service industry knows what I mean. Sunday evening is like breathing life back into a corpse, trying to keep it reanimated through another week. The business from Friday and Saturday just eats up any stock that you might have. Like I said, this place was a haunt to me by reputation, but as an employee, I didn't really think about it very often. Unless something weird was actually happening, it was never really in my mind. We weren't shaking the moment that we clocked in or peeking into rooms before we entered them. It was a job, so we focused. I was on my 3rd or 4th trip up when I heard it. Footsteps in the kitchen. I was stocking the beer coolers in the bar. There was a straight shot from my position, through the bathroom hallway and into the first portion of the kitchen. It sounded like someone's sneakers were sticking to the tile, and then descended the stairs into the basement. I looked up and listened, but then I remembered that I was alone. I shrugged and figured it was the ghost getting settled in for the night. There's really nothing to do about it except for hurry up and just get the hell out of here. I had a system though. If shit got too weird before I finished, I would just leave and come back in the morning to get it all done. I don't mess around with the dead or whatever the hell haunts this place. As I put the last beer in the fridge, I can hear one of the walk-in coolers open. The pull handles are these big jingly metal things, so they're loud as hell when you yank on them. I stood still for a moment, but everything went quiet. Just as I started to break down the cardboard of the beer boxes, I hear that cooler slam shut downstairs, and it felt like it shook the whole building when it did. Alright, it's go time. I start speeding through every little job that I have left. I didn't even bother counting my tips. Just tossed them in my purse and saved it for when I get home. Sinks are drained, things are closed and secure. I just need to lock the back door and hit the lights in the kitchen. At this point, 10 or 15 minutes had passed, and nothing more had really happened. The bar kind of reverted back to its normalcy, so I disarmed my paranoia that I had from earlier. I was still on edge, but I did my last walkthrough, found a few things that needed to organize or fill in the back. I made the mistake of putting my purse down, as well as the bank bag and the keys for the door. All of a sudden, I was back in work mode, and soon, I found myself running downstairs to grab a box of soda for the machine that was upstairs, as well as to turn off the lights. The owner of the building was adamant about never being left on because the wiring was so faulty. He said it was like begging for a structure fire. I could see the light switch at the bottom of the stairs. I could even see the stack of soda boxes. I didn't see anything prowling, and I couldn't hear any more footsteps. So I threw my caution to the wind and went down those goddamn stairs. When I reached the bottom, I saw the last thing that I wanted to see. The door to the biggest walk-in was wide open, and it's halfway down the basement, in the middle between the first walk-in and the freezer on the end. Whatever, the lights are on, I'm already down here. So I walked over, grabbed the handle, and before I could yank it shut, something moved to my left, so I instinctually turned to look at it. At first, there was nothing there, just the kegs and random bags of cleaning towels stuffed in between them. Then I see a shadow pass against the wall, cast from the bowl behind the door that I'm holding. I don't have time to react or run like I want to. What I would describe as a big, menacing shadow person quickly stepped around the edge of the door and into view. Instead of running backwards, I just fell sideways into the walk-in. It was the quickest way to create space in my head, so I just fell in that direction completely out of panic. We had those plastic blinds that try to keep the cold air inside the unit, and they flapped closed after I fell through them. I scrambled backwards as the door slammed shut. I stood there for the next 5 or maybe even 10 minutes. Honestly, I don't know how long it was. I just listened to complete destruction behind that steel door. I could hear kegs banging around, slamming into the walls, cans rolling around, boxes tearing. It sounded like a war zone. The door periodically shook with some of the louder bangs. I began to tremor too, as I didn't have a coat and holding temperature down there was 36 degrees. After a while, it got quiet, and I couldn't stand to be there any longer. I moved to the door, pressed my ear against it, and just listened. Nothing. I gently pushed the handle in, but the door didn't budge. Something was holding it closed from the outside. I got scared at first, assuming it was the shadow thing that I saw. But as I stood there, shivering for another 10 minutes, I remember all the kegs banging around. Surely, if enough of them were lying on the floor, they could be pinning the door closed. Suddenly, the reality that I might freeze to death settles on my shoulders, like the first faint layer of the frost that'll kill me. Panic gets a stranglehold on me. I start throwing myself against the door, but again, it doesn't budge a hair. That doesn't deter me, though. I push and push and push, till I realize that I'm screaming louder than I ever have before, veins bulging out of my face and neck. I swear I could feel my teeth moving because I was screaming that hard. Only after I gave up and tried to catch my breath did the thing finally start to crack open. Sure enough, as I pushed, I could feel things moving on the other side of the door, shifting around. When there was enough space, I poked my head out to find a couple of kegs and cans holding the door closed. The whole basement was a complete disaster, like a tornado ripped through there. I climbed out of the walk-in and slammed it closed and booked it over to the stairwell. There's no way in hell that I was going to stay and clean any of that up. I'll just explain in the morning what had happened. I figured that they'd understand. Everyone has had weird experiences that worked there before, but maybe not quite on this level. Only my mom has ever told me stories that are this scary. I cast one more glance behind me as I turned the lights off and went up the stairs. I swear to God I saw that shadow thing step out from the furthest back corner, as if it manifested itself right before my eyes. Then it was dark, and I was sprinting up to freedom. I grabbed my purse and all my stuff, and hightailed it through the main room and down the staircase. When I got there the next morning, everything had already been cleaned up. Everyone was desperate to know what the hell happened. I explained my story and everyone just nodded, as if they expected it. With the level of destruction that I left behind, they figured it had to be something drastic, either a robbery or a ghost. Thankfully, nothing like that ever happened to me again. But I also never let myself be alone there anymore. A year before COVID hit, I got hired at a call center way downtown, like inner city. We worked taking calls for a roadside assistance company that will remain anonymous. Although honestly, the last time I looked them up, I couldn't even find a website for them. They may or may not even be in business anymore. Anyway, because of the nature of our industry, our office operated 24 hours a day. It wasn't this big private call center, but just a ground level corner unit in a commercial office block. We shared a building with 10 or 12 other businesses. All of them would operate during normal hours. At 5 p.m., the whole parking lot cleared out, and the only light on would be coming from our place. It had no signage and a keypad on the door for around-the-clock access. We would trade shifts at 4 p.m., midnight, and 9 a.m., usually in two-man teams, sometimes three or four throughout the week or on holiday weekends. The overnight shift was typically just one guy, Benji, but holiday weekends, they'd put two of us from midnight to 9 a.m. So there we were. I think it was Labor Day weekend, and it's Benji and I handling the phones on a Friday overnight shift. I didn't ever mind getting these shifts because honestly, I love working with the guy. He was a little older than me and has some of the craziest stories that I've ever heard. He grew up inner city, kind of a criminal, but got cleaned up and was looking to break into the music business. I was into drawing and illustration, and he liked looking at whatever I was working on at the time. We'd just hang out and bullshit until the sun came up. We'd even troll people on the phone if they were spamming or dodging the line. Looking back now, it was a lot of fun in those dark hours, and a lot of daydreaming. One night we ordered Domino's, split a pizza and some Cinesticks. Legendary meal for a couple of call room guys. Little did I know in my early 20s that I was slowly becoming lactose intolerant, so so all of that cheese and butter would send my stomach and my colon into hysterics. We ate around midnight, talked, and then worked until about 1:30 a.m. And then I started catching the gurgles. By 2 a.m., I knew something was about to happen, out of one end or the other. I clued Benji into what was going on so he could watch the phone line for me. I slipped out the door, which was the only way in and out of the office. There was no secondary escape, no back door, just a big panel window in the back. In hindsight, the office almost seemed illegal. Lots of things within the operation were just shady as hell. As you can imagine, because there's so many office units, we also share a single pair of bathrooms. They were on the ground floor, and they were external, as in, the doors were open to the public. Everyone who worked there had a key to either open one door or the other. They were all the way down one of these stretch of businesses, about 40 feet, and then around a corner and tucked into a little back nook of a second floor. This kept them out of sight so no randoms or weirdos tried to use them and or vandalize them. I go in, struggling with my unbeknownst to me digestive issues, and then wash up. As I'm looking into the mirror, I hear someone push on the door from the outside. I laugh and yell something out, as I assumed it was Benji just messing with me. There was no response except for a couple of hard whacks against the metal. Weird, but I had been in there forever, so again, I think Benji is just being funny. I open the door. There's no one there. I step out and wander down the little hallway, but instead of continuing on to the office, I hook left and go out to a small secondary parking lot. It's out in the back. It's where the dumpsters are, as well as this little outdoor area. As I step into the parking lot, I hear feet slapping the asphalt, running at me from some direction. Now I know something weird is going on. I turn and bolt back for the office. I'm sprinting and about to fall face first into the cement, but catch myself on the handle just in time. I start to punch in the code and immediately get it wrong. It's flashing red. I have to wait 5 seconds for it to reset. All I can hear is my heart, my breathing, and these flapping feet out there in the dark. I jiggle the handle and scream for Benji. I'm banging on the door. Suddenly, I realize I've switched positions. Now it's me outside being the scary, chaotic thing, and I can see him through the blinds, looking over his shoulder. He's on the phone, which is flashing red on 3 ports. It apparently picked up while I was handling my business. I turn and start banging on the glass, begging him to get up. I see him hit the hold button, swing the chair around, and rush over to the door. He pushes it open, I spill in, and he slams it right shut again. Breathless, I tell him what had just happened to me. I'm expecting Benji to freak out, lock the extra bolt on the door, and tell me to call the police. Nope, the exact opposite happened. He rolls up his sleeves and steps out into the cool night air. The person was lurking around at the end of the building, where it turned for the bathroom nook. They were barefoot, drug-addled, your average homeless fella in our city. I watched from the threshold of the office door as Benji pigeon-chested this guy and gave him the stern get-the-hell-out-of-here stick, and sure enough, got the guy to tuck tail and run. What I perceived as a serial killer, Benji immediately pegged for just a hobo tweaker. Like I said, he was a hard-ass inner-city dude. He had a colorful history, bit of a rap sheet. I was very grateful to have him by my side every time shit went down in that office. We ran into that lurking creep a few more times and honestly had all kinds of crazy experiences while working there. There was a 7-Eleven right across the street that would get robbed, roadside calls where people were shot, even one of our drivers. And also a time we helped a guy escape a cult compound by towing his car off of their property. I've never told these stories online, so if anyone is interested in them, just leave me a comment. Cheers.